This is HPR episode 2462 entitled Audiobook Club 14 Triplanetary, first in the Lensemann series, and is part of the series HPR Audiobook Club. It is hosted by HPR Audiobook Club, and is about 117 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, in this episode, the HPR Audiobook Club discusses Triplanetary, first in the Lensemann series by E.E.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Let's knock them ports.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today, again, we've got another Hacker Public Radio audio book club. I'm Pokey and I'm one of the members of this round table. And joining us also today is Taj.
What's good, everybody? But I think really it's more of a triangular table at this point.
Squirkle? No, we need one more for a squirkle. All right, anyway, we also got X1101. What's up, dude?
I am coming to you live from the frozen, raining mid-coast.
Yeah, it is freezing rain tonight. It's going to be ice by the morning. Tomorrow's going to be a bitch to get to work. Get up early.
Is mid-coast a word? Is that a thing?
Yes.
So it's kind of like Kentuckiana. Nobody outside of the area has ever heard of that.
I thought the mid-coast was that part of my shirt that sticks out where I wish it wouldn't.
Boom, boom.
Wah, wah, wah.
Damn, the show just started, and I've got three of those from you guys already. I'm not on a roll. Todd, this was your book. Why don't you explain to people, in case they've never heard before, what is the Audio Book Club and how does it work?
The Audio Book Club is a gathering of fine individuals who have chosen for the past month to partake in an audiobook that is freely available. This one came from LibriVox. And we decide to get together on Patch Tuesdays of every month and discuss said audiobook. We do so by the beginning of the episode will be spoiler-free commentary on the book. Then we will all partake in a beverage and review that said beverage for a nice little intermission. And then the end of the book, we will spoil the ever-loving bejesus out of the book and tell you why you should or should not have enjoyed it.
Nicely done, my friend. Very well. I will add that, you know, at the very least, we have fine individuals because all Hacker Public Radio listeners and show hosts are welcome to participate. But on a really good night, we just get a room full of nerds.
Same thing.
Well, I don't know. Not everybody has to be a nerd to be a fine individual. Just if you step it up another notch, you go from fine individual to nerd. That's the way I see it.
I second that opinion.
Fair point.
So our book was Triplanetary by E.E., air quotes, Doc, and air quotes, Smith. And this was pretty cool and pretty historically significant, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So, Todd, you got a better grasp on this than I do. Why is it historically significant?
This is the first book in a series of books that is called the Lensemann series. It was written kind of, I know this, I think, was originally written in 38, but then it was kind of retconned into the Lensemann series because it was written before that. And then he went back and added some to make it part of that series. It's just one of those things that's really super influential to most people who made science fiction that people our age grew up with. If you read interviews with a lot of people, somewhere along the line, they will mention reading Lensemann and being super influenced by it. Star Wars is a big example. DC Comics, the Green Lantern Corps is basically a gigantic ripoff of the Lensman. I know for me, the way I came into it was Babylon 5. The guy that wrote that, J. Michael Straczynski, talks about Lensman like it's the Bible. I mean, it's a lot of people have read it. It's just super influential.
I got a lot of Star Trek out of it, not so much Star Wars.
It definitely is space opera, like it in the best sense of the word. I read it begrudgingly because I was like 50s sci-fi, you know, but now I actually have this weird appreciation where I really dig like retro sci-fi, mainly from reading this and just really liking it. The only thing I think that these books suffer from is like there are so many things that these books came up with that everybody else has used, and now everybody's like, oh, that's, I've seen that a million times. Well, this is probably the first place it happened.
Yeah, that kept me going through parts of it that, you know, to me, I had that 50 sci-fi, you know, feeling. And not when I heard the audiobook, but when I read it, because I had read this on the Kindle a while back before I even knew it was available as an audiobook. And that kind of kept me going, you know what, this is probably the first time I'd like to see where, if not where some other stuff came from, because maybe I'm not good enough to pick that out, but maybe I could recognize something. Maybe something will be familiar to me, and it'll feel like some new sci-fi, and then I'll know that it came from that.
It's not so bad in this book, but the later books, there's a lot of stuff that's just like, oh, people just flat out rip this off like hardcore.
But isn't that how all of sci-fi works? If somebody does it, everybody else thinks it's cool and rips it off terribly.
I think it's how all of art works.
Agreed.
I mean, shoot, that's how technology works, you know? I mean, the first guy that ever does something, you know, he gets to call himself a scientist, and the second guy who does it, he gets to call himself an engineer. The third guy who does a thing gets to call himself a technician, you know, and the fourth guy's just a line operator or a mechanic. You know, I mean, everything's kind of like that.
I mean, I have to make our Star Wars reference for the evening, but I mean, John Williams made a living ripping off other people's music and making it sound awesome. So, I mean, that works.
I have another one in my notes, too.
I don't get the reference, but that's okay.
It's a music nerd joke. Anybody? When I was in music school, we used to sit around and listen to John Williams soundtracks and like set and pick out like little motifs and things and be like, oh, that's from this symphony. Or he reuses a lot of other people's ideas. And I mean, he does brilliantly. I mean, all his music sounds great. It's great for movies and whatnot. But he definitely borrows a little bit.
I mean, this sounds like Pachelbel's Rant.
Oh, it could be.
Give me Danny Elfman any day.
Depends on when Danny Elfman.
Nah, I don't seem to care. It's just Danny Elfman is Danny Elfman. I'm very happy with Danny Elfman, no matter when it came from.
Even Oingo Boingo?
Especially Oingo Boingo. In fact, especially Oingo Boingo on The Gong Show.
Well played, sir. Well played.
I'll just be over here being too young to get the references.
When we're done, Google Oingo Boingo Gong Show, and if it touches you, you then will like everything about Oingo Boingo, and if it doesn't, you will not like anything about Oingo Boingo. It is absolutely the touchstone for Oingo Boingo. It's their definitive work.
Get off my lawn!
I'm an excitable boy when it comes to Oingo Boingo. I'm sorry.
So, anyways, back at this book.
Wait, there's a book?
Squirrel.
Going to be one of those shows.
In true HPR audiobook club fashion.
I have notes this time.
All right. You got one that's not a spoiler?
We've kind of covered a lot of it, and a lot of the other ones are spoilers. But I guess my notes say that the Star Trek and every other sci-fi ever.
I did see a lot of the Green Lantern in this, and I watched that movie, The Green Lantern, the one with that guy that kind of looks like Ben Affleck.
Except worse.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a Ben Affleck fan, so I would rather see that guy in all of his roles. I don't like Ben Affleck. But anyway, that one, and the guy that, spoiler, turns yellow at the end of that movie, I could just picture that guy as the villain at any point in this.
That would be Sinestro for anybody who's watching at home that is screaming into the MP3 player.
Yeah, you're allowed to hate me for not getting or liking the Green Lantern thing, or pretty much any DC comic for that matter.
No, if you didn't like the Green Lantern movie, you're in with all the Green Lantern fans. So you're good.
Oh, right on. Okay.
I enjoyed it as a movie. I did not enjoy it as a comic book transition into a movie. And for reference, I believe his name is Ryan Reynolds.
The guy that looks like Ben Affleck?
Yes. Henceforth, he shall be known as not Ben Affleck.
What? Wait, all right. Hold on. Why are you guys laughing at me? Is that a stupid thing to say? Am I making some error here that I don't know about?
I don't see the resemblance, but that's completely okay.
I'm just going to refer to him as not the guy who plays Batman.
Okay, because I don't mind being laughed at. I don't want you to get the wrong idea. Sometimes I like to know why.
I hovered a chuckle, so I wanted to chuckle, so I pressed the button.
Okay, fair enough. I don't know. I thought that this book was cool, not just for its historical significance in literature, which it was cool for that. Dan Carlin is a guy I like to listen to his podcast, and he has said in the past that you can get anybody interested in history, even though most people hate history, if you get them to look into the history of the thing that they already like, because everything has history. So, you know, most people don't like history because it's always political history, but you're talking to people who generally don't like politics. But if someone's a fan of racing, get them to study racing history, or a fan of cosmetics, get them to study cosmetic history, or in this case, a fan of literature, get them to look a little bit into literary history. And I thought it was good for that. But it was also good as a window into like the time that it was written and the different morality and ethics and in a lot of the similar ones as well, but just the kind of general outlook on the world that at least this author thought that people would relate to.
I think you have a great point, because I would love to sit down and read the pre-Lensman rewrite, because that was done in 38, and I don't remember. I think it was at 45 or 40. It was post 45, I think, when it was rewritten for Lensman. I'm dying to know how much of it changed between that point, because I think there's some things in the book that should have changed, or if they did change. I'd love to see how they changed, or if it didn't change at all.
Just thinking for a moment about other sci-fi books and having had rewrites, not that long ago I read another classic sci-fi book that I kicked myself for having not read 10 years earlier, but Stranger in a Strange Land. And I think I've found an original copy before the rewrite he had to do.
Ooh, is that digital? Will there be a link?
I'm sorry. No, not an. He did the original one is the one you can find now. When he originally published it, they had to cut like a third of the book out because the story as it's published now, it was just a lot over the top for the sensibilities of the time. And his publisher made them cut like a third of the book out. And I think I found one of those is what I mean.
When was that written? Is that our next audiobook?
I don't know if there's an audiobook at all of it. While we're talking, I will go find out.
Cool. That would be cool if two episodes in a row the conversation just suggested the audiobook rather than us pre-planning it.
We have reached emergence.
So, I don't know. I'm going to try to – I think I can touch on this without getting into spoilers. But I felt like a lot of this book felt – kind of muddled and kind of confused just because so much of it felt like pre-World War II, and then things were thrown in there that felt post-World War II, and you could feel at certain points that kind of that time span. Did you notice that, Taj?
my understanding is that all of that was added for the rewrite. All the stuff before World War, actually all that stuff basically before World War III was added after the when he did the Lensman rewrite. But yeah, there's a definite shift. And really those you could totally cut those chapters out and I'd be okay, except for one. I don't want to spoil it. We'll get into there when we spoil it. There's a chapter in there that I think is really good.
Oh, they all are. Don't cut any of them.
I would disagree.
Okay.
I think the core of the story is in the back half, and I think that that was always the story. But yeah, there's a definite like thing, and I think it's interesting because like we could say like how it kind of echoes the time that it was written, but I also think that it is in some ways like insanely predictive of things that are still occurring that bothered me greatly.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a great point, and you're absolutely right, but maybe I didn't make much, but that wasn't the point I was trying to make. I wasn't referring to the plot line at all. I just meant that the, like maybe some of the technologies that he invented for the book, I just think a lot of them maybe wouldn't have been thought about before World War II, and then post World War II, they were so obvious. Maybe he couldn't have avoided using them, like that kind of thing.
I'm interested now because I'm curious as to which ones you're thinking of.
I don't know if I have specifics though. I don't know, fission maybe.
Yeah, they're real big on the nuclear talk, which I mean makes sense for the time. I mean, it would basically be like, to me, anytime you have 50 sci-fi and it talks about nuclear, it's the same thing as if I go pick up a novel in the store today that's sci-fi and it talks about using dark matter to like do things. Like, it's just the hot word that nobody actually, we kind of barely understand, that people just use to sound cool.
Yeah, and when they do that, I always picture like Captain Nemo from the Disney 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea with the, you know, the fission is just kind of illuminating his face.
You know, that's what would happen. You know, just a little light. It'll be okay. Everything will be safe.
Yeah, right. He's got the window open and he's showing the guy, you know, here's how it's powered. And he opens the little window and he looks through. Like, that's kind of what I picture in a setting like this book where it's thrown about like that, because it really is just the magic of this book. The plot bullet is fission.
Bringing it back. Man, did XXL1 go port knocking?
No, I was looking for Stranger, and it is not freely available.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay, we'll have to do something else, but we'll worry about that later.
Is it public domain, or is it still copyrighted?
As far as I can tell, it's still copyrighted, because when he died, the copyright relapsed and then his wife renewed it, and that's how they published the now famous version of the book, the original rendition of it.
Well, I'm glad that happened. I wish it was in the public domain.
No, no disagreement.
Yeah, that's too bad. I'm going to have to look into that later, because I've heard of it a couple times. I've never read it.
So, I mean, I don't think we ever actually just kind of went around and said, like, what were your feelings about it? We've talked about it kind of like, I mean, I said before we started recording, like, I like this and I enjoy listening to it, but my enjoyment is very much colored by the books after this. I think it's probably, for me, the weakest in the series. So I'm kind of lukewarm on it, and I'm interested just like, just shotgun approach. How do you guys feel about it?
I really liked it, but I really liked it as a, you know, 40s or 50s era space opera. With the guy reading it and the quality of the recording, which I liked, by the way, and I'll come back to that in a moment, I kind of felt like I was, you know, just sitting around the family radio waiting for this episode to come on for, you know, all of them in a row. But I really enjoyed listening to it.
Yeah, I think, Todd, you probably hit the nail on the head with lukewarm. It's difficult to frame my opinion squarely around the audiobook, having read the text version first, and recently as well. It was only very recently that I read it. And when I read it, it felt like required reading, because I had heard a couple times, you got to read The Lensman, It's the Greatest Thing in the World. And it's not for as well known as it is, it doesn't seem to be all that well known. Like, I had a hard time finding The Lensman. Like, Wikipedia seems to be the only authority on it out there, other than, you know, just you Google for it, you find conversations. So just to even find the stuff, it was not the easiest thing, or it was not as easy as I was expecting it to be. So when I found this, it's like, okay, this is the first one. I'd like to read the first one. And had I known that it wasn't the first one, that that was a retroactive change, I might've just skipped it. So I kind of plodded through it, you know, waiting for it to get to the awesome. And this never really gets to the awesome. It gets good. And like you said, some of the preamble chapters, I think one of them in particular is the best one in the book. And I'd like to hear if we're thinking of the same chapter. But it's it was good. It was good enough to keep reading. But I wouldn't call it a page turner, and I wouldn't call the audiobook appointment listening either. It was not like every, like, ooh, I can't wait till I finish my topical podcast so I can get to, you know, my entertainment here, my serial fiction. It wasn't like that, like it has been with many of the books we've reviewed, or many of the audiobooks we've reviewed, excuse me.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it is kind of like a very well-known secret, I guess, that people talk about it all the time, but it's very hard to find things about it. I know if you Google Lensman, like, all that really ever comes up is the anime, which it's on YouTube. You can watch it if you want. It's atrocious, especially if you've read the books. It's atrocious.
Okay.
I mean, it's cool if you just watch it, like, and say, okay, this is just a, you know, 70s anime that, you know, is spacey and has stuff in it that might be cool. It's all right. It's not great, but it is not the Lensman from the books. But I try to avoid LibriVox a lot of the times because I've been burned on a lot of readers, and I tend to find that the audio quality is not as good as it is at other places. But I thought the audio quality was good, and he did a pretty good job. I take issue with some of his pronunciations of things, but you know, that's nothing to be too upset about. I know if I had not read this before in paper, there's one word that he says that I would have never known what it was if I had not read the book.
If you complain about this guy's reading, I'm going to hit you with a iron pipe, because he's done so much reading on LibriVox. If you like click on his name, he's got tons and tons and tons of books. This guy's just, he's a community guy and he's a giver, and that's awesome. And yeah, I'll hit you in an iron pipe if you mention it again.
No, he's all, I mean, like, the whole thing is really good, and it's really subtle. That's what I like. I actually enjoy it. Like, it's, I do kind of get that, like, audio drama vibe, but without, like, over-the-topness. Like, he kind of does voices, but he doesn't really. It's kind of like, I'll just change my inflection a little bit, and that's good enough. And I kind of dig that. I think it's cool. It's a cool touch. But yeah, the RN thing drove me insane constantly.
Well, that's I think, more what I meant about the audio drama, was just his tone and his pacing gave me that kind of feel. And I only had one little quirk I found with the audio. There was one of the back half of the chapters where there was a little blip or something happened where the recording wasn't smooth. But one in a whole book is fine.
And I fully admit, if I'm going to talk trash about LibriVox without, like, putting my own ass on the line and doing some reading for him, that's not not cool. So I'm well aware of that.
Yeah, no, I said, yeah, no, I hate saying that. Anyway, it was a good reading. It definitely was. I did not agree with the way he pronounced the word iron, and I didn't agree with a couple other pronunciations at the time that I can't even think of now. It's only because iron is a central figure. It's almost a character in this book that you notice it because it gets said a lot. As far as the rest of his reading, I thought it was good. He came very, very close to that old-timey radio feel. And I'm not sure if he was going for that or if it just came natural to him, but I certainly enjoyed it. And as far as the audio quality, I thought the recording quality was fantastic. The only thing I noticed, and it was not the same thing that X101 that you noticed, somewhere along in the middle of the book, I noticed that the recording would go silent, or he would stop speaking, and there was noise in that silence, and it was not always the same noise. It was different stuff. At the end of one episode, it almost sounded like a record needle had gotten to the end of the record, and it was just kind of popping. In another one, there was it sounded like typing was going on a mechanical typewriter. It almost sounded like keys hitting the hammers hitting the paper. It was weird. It was so, so faint. I wouldn't have noticed it if I hadn't been listening on an earbud. I wouldn't have noticed it in the car or anything, but I wasn't sure what that was going on or if he was trying to, you know, do something in there just for fun, but I found it interesting.
Interesting is good.
It was a non sequitur, that's for sure, but an interesting one.
Please, like, we don't go to non sequiturs like every 30 seconds.
I'm not complaining. Not complaining at all. It's just something odd that I noticed. Another thing, did anybody else have any trouble with the download?
I didn't.
Nope.
Okay. I had trouble with the I downloaded the zipped version where you get all the files in one, you know, zip, 1.zip, and it wouldn't unzip. It had errors, and I downloaded it, and it gave me errors unzipping it, so I, you know, moved it and tried it again, and it gave me errors again, so I deleted it and downloaded again, and it gave me errors again the second time, and I used a different downloader each time, so I don't think it was on my end, and I was just having to use my favorite Firefox plugin, down them all, and grabbed the individual files with it, and they were all fine. But yeah, the zip file just was giving me errors.
And see, I listened to the stuff with as the RSS feed, so I wouldn't have had the same experience at all.
I'm pretty sure I downloaded the zip and it worked fine, so I don't know. Mileage may vary.
Well, I guess it must be on my end then.
Blame Fairpoint.
Ooh, I can blame Fairpoint for a lot this month. There's a rabbit hole we won't soon come out of. My internet was down for over a week, and there were several long and angry phone calls to Fairpoint, who did not handle the situation well at all.
Are you talking Comcast level bad or just bad?
I have never had the kinds of problems with Comcast that I have had with Fairpoint. Now, I haven't dealt much with Comcast. It's mostly been, if I'm helping someone, it's been them, because I don't think I've ever had Comcast myself. But no, it was bad. I called up complaining about an outage, and they, for the very first thing that they did that pissed me off right from the start, they would not even call it an outage. And, you know, the fact that my bill is paid and my internet doesn't work, it's out. That's an outage. They would not tell me when a technician was going to have a look at their system on their end. And until that happened, they could not tell me when a technician was going to make a site visit out to my house. And to the best of my knowledge, they did not fix it. It came back up. It may or may not have been something I did here. I'm not sure. Cause I did do something and it worked the next day. I didn't think it had come back up the night that I was messing with it. But yeah, they pissed me right off just by not even telling me if or when a technician would be able to look at it. The only thing they told me was it would be at least 24 to 48 hours before a technician would have a chance to look and tell me whether or not a technician was coming out to look at it.
I'm pretty sure if my internet was off for a week, by the time they got here, I'd have like dreadlocks and be covered in mud and wearing deer skins and devolved into grunting. I mean, I know that's like a first world thing, but it wouldn't go well.
Yeah, I have an Android phone, but it's, you know, real slow and real small hardware. It's not the kind of thing that I can type out emails on. So a lot of things just didn't get done at my house.
Anyways, that book.
That book, man. Sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Oh, I totally just chucked a grenade and watched it happen.
Yeah, you knew my internet was out. We've been talking.
And to be fair, at my last job, I dealt enough with Fairpoint that I'm fairly comfortable making fun of them anytime the opportunity arises.
Hey, me too. Same thing at my last job. Whew, I'm ready for a drink after that Fairpoint rant.
All right, you'll have to excuse me while I go and fetch mine.
Was there more to say pre-spoiler? I don't mean to force us into our intermission.
Nope, I need a drink too.
Nah, I think we got it.
Okay. Taj, have you got your drink ready to go? Let me guess. Is it iced tea?
It is not iced tea.
Lemonade.
It is not lemonade.
Oh. Let's see. You might have a fancy bottle of fruit juice.
It is not fancy.
Holy smokes. I struck out. What do you got?
I am boring as always, but, you know, enjoying it. I have it's gone already, but I had a glass of grapefruit juice.
Oh, all right. That's cool. I haven't heard anybody say that in a long time. Grapefruit juice seems to have phased out.
I don't know. Every once in a while, I just get a hankering for it. And so we were at the store today and I saw it and I was like, hey, that would be nice this evening. So that's what I picked up.
That's good. Is that you buy a big bottle of it or like a big jug of it, like a gallon size thing or small?
It's one of the, it's like a local like juice place that makes all kinds of juices. I don't know where the fruit comes from because obviously they don't grow many grapefruits in Indiana. It just comes in like a gallon, like milk jug. You just pick it up and bring it home. So that's pretty good.
Just thinking about drinking grape juice makes me want to put on lip balm.
Wow.
Yeah, it kind of attacks my lips. It's good stuff. I like grapefruit juice, but yeah, it's making my lips feel dry and cracked already.
Nothing like that citric acid to remind you of all those little microscopic cuts.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Do you cut it with anything or just drink it straight?
Straight up. It's the only way to go.
Oh, straight up. Oh, so you shake it and strain it.
Now just pour it out of the bottle and put it in the cup.
Oh, that's straight. See, one of my nerderies is mixology. And straight and straight up are not the same thing.
I have been educated.
Yeah, everybody thinks that straight up is straight, and it isn't. Straight is just straight. Straight up means you shake it with ice, and then you strain the ice out of it. So it cools the drink off and doesn't water it down very much. Whereas straight is not cooled and on ice waters it down. But it's useless to correct anybody because everybody gets it wrong.
I will probably never get it wrong again because I'll have little space pokey in my brain saying, "Don't, that's not right. Don't do that." This is how people become educated.
Well, I spent a lot of time in college competitive drinking and you know, I learned how to mix some drinks and wanted to do it right. I've got a couple of books on mixing drinks, and that was, you know, one of the things that they wanted you to get right before they moved you on to the next lesson, you know?
So basically you're telling me that you studied more about mixology in college than you did actually what you were supposed to study.
Well, yeah, I thought you knew that. I thought it went without saying.
Well done.
Well, there's a time and a place for everything, and it's called college.
All right, what's your drink, X1101?
Tonight, I'm sharing with you all a gift from a good friend of mine. This is Goose Island's 2014 Bourbon County Brand Stout, stout aged in bourbon barrels.
Damn.
This is 13.8% alcohol by volume, 12 fluid ounces.
Holy smokes, you're going to make it to the end of the show? 13.8?
Maybe.
That's impressive. Did they tell you how old the bourbon barrels are? How many years the bourbon flavored them?
It doesn't, I don't think. This is developed in the bottle over 5 years.
Okay, that's cool. All right, most importantly, can you taste the bourbon?
Well, let's start with how it smells. It smells almost like a rich chocolate syrup. You can taste the bourbon and the smoke, but there's a lot of chocolatey stout flavor still.
Ah, dude, I'm getting shivers. I want one of those.
What was the... You and I, or maybe it was me and Bill, had one in Boston that was almost this good, that tasted like a bourbon ale that was basically bourbon, but at 8%.
Yeah, I was in on some of that. That was the Kentucky Brewery, I think is the name of the brewery. Kentucky Brewery Bourbon Barrel. I think that was the Bourbon Barrel Ale, and later I found in a bottle the Bourbon Barrel Stout, which was awesome.
Yeah, this is definitely a stout.
But that's not Kentucky Brewery, right?
No, this is by Goose Island out of Chicago.
Oh, man, that sounds so good. Yeah, and I found the same thing. The Bourbon Barrel Ale was one of the top two or three beers I've ever had, and the Bourbon Barrel Stout blew it out of the water.
Now, the friend who gave this to me said they only sell this one day a year. They sell it on Black Friday, and they sell out because they only make a little bit of it, and it sells out. And he gave me a bottle a week or so ago, and I decided to save it to share with you fine folks.
Oh, that is a true friend. Keep that guy around.
Oh my god, this is so good.
I'm so jealous. That sounds phenomenal. If I hadn't had that bourbon barrel stout, I wouldn't have anything to compare it to, because nothing really even compared to that as far as the complexity and the balance and the bourboniness of it. And yeah, that sounds awesome, dude. Congratulations on scoring one of those.
I swear in my head canon, I thought you just said when you finished that sentence about how good it was that you said, I'll be in my bunk.
I might have.
For all you listening at home, that Firefly reference right there. Add that one to the drinking game bingo thing, whatever you're playing.
All right. Time for mine, or are you going to share more? Because I'm listening if you want to. I'm still there with you.
It's malty and chocolatey and very strong. It may be just a hair sweet for my tastes, but that's mostly
because... It's a stout.
Yeah, and I come from drinking... Especially for Goose Island. They make an English-style IPA that is either in the 30s or the 50s on the IBU scale. So, I mean, it's bitter, and this is completely the other way.
Nice. How is it for carbonation? Is it... It's got to be kind of low carbonation and smooth with a flavor like that.
Low carb, very smooth, there's no head at all.
That's pretty good. That's awesome.
It looks like I'm staring at a glass of cola, only considerably better.
Yeah, I like when a beer won't allow light to pass through it.
Pokey, were you the one who recommended Double Bag?
Yes, I recommend Double Bag to everyone I ever speak to.
I had it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's my go-to beer. I mean, there are definitely like fancier beers, but not all. You can't drink all of them any time of year, any weather, all six of them in the same night if you're in that kind of a mood. But double bag, you can anytime, any place. It's appropriate. I mean, as long as you don't have to drive, because it is a double, and it does have a you know, fairly high alcohol content for beer. But yeah.
Well, one day I got 5 IPAs and that, and it was a nice change of pace in the middle there.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, but see, that's one of the things I like about it the most, is that you can drink several of them without tiring of them. And I cannot do that with bitter beers at all.
Well, I got a bunch of different ones, and that was a really interesting thing to drink, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 IPAs in a row, kind of getting, well, this one's got these notes different than that one. And it was interesting and a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Next to an IPA, double bag would taste pretty malty.
All right, go for it, Pokey. What are you sharing with us tonight?
Okay, I found one that was a really nice, pleasant surprise. It's definitely a microbrew, and it's a microbrew price, but at least it's not a craft beer price, and it's really, really drinkable, and it's from a brewery that's fast becoming one of my favorite breweries, Smutty Nose Brewing Company. And this one is their winter ale, which unfortunately I'm not going to be able to get it all year round, but this one's just really, really nice. I was really surprised. Not really surprised, because Smutty Nose has been, you know, everything I've tried from them has been good, but was really pleased at how good this one is. So it's, boy, it's an interesting flavor. How am I going to describe this one? I need another sip. Hold on. So it feels kind of thick for an ale, but boy, it's almost a porter of an ale. It's darker than an ale. It's thicker than your standard ale. I mean, I guess, you know, that's probably pretty standard for a winter ale. It's nice and malty. It's got a real kind of caramel sweetness to it. Not a real sugary sweetness. And you know, sometimes you get a real sweet beer, it's almost like a honey sweet, but this isn't. This is more like a caramel, more like a browned butter kind of taste. It's just really smooth and soft feeling in the mouth, and just, it feels thick. And it's still got some suds to it. It's not like, you know, towards the stouts and the porters. It feels more like an ale, but thicker and just more substantial. And it's making me really happy.
Seems like we're betting 1,000 tonight in the drink department.
Yeah, it's got a interesting smell to it. I almost want to say it smells like your grandma's attic, but in a good way. Kind of dusty and you know, like cardboard boxy, but not that old nasty dust and you know, cardboard box has been dried out, but just that kind of, hey, there's something good coming out of this box, you know, almost like, hey, that's where the Christmas ornaments are, that kind of box.
Hey, Grandma, what's this book called, Triplanetary?
Oh, that's the book that we're about to spoil, Sonny.
Okay. I nearly did a spit take with my stout, and that would have been very upsetting. But I didn't.
Not for us.
But I didn't, so.
Sorry, brah.
Yeah, I would have appreciated you trying that hard to get me some. All right, Taj. Best chapter of the book?
I don't know if it's the best chapter of the book, but it's like the one that like I constantly remember, and I can never, it's the chapter I can never remember what book it's from, but it's from this book, is the one during World War II, the Siberians, like where the weapons guys that are like testing the stuff. I love that chapter. Like it has nothing to do with anything else other than showing how like awesome the Kinnisons are. But I just love it. Like I could read that all day long.
Yeah. I thought that one was great too. And you said you didn't like the rest of the other ones. I thought a good close second was the Gladiator chapter. I really enjoyed that one.
Of all the history ones, I think that's probably the the best. Because, I mean, when it was rewritten, you know, World War II just happened. So, I mean, I guess he would have seen, you know, World War II as being modern. I despise the Atlantis chapter. I have no idea why it's there. I have no idea why Atlantis is some nuclear civilization that everybody else forgot about. I mean, I just don't get it.
Yeah, as if there's no such thing as fallout and it doesn't have a half-life.
Oh, it's like it's science fiction or anything. Oh, wait.
Womp womp.
Yeah, I'm totally with it. And you're right, and the Kinnison thing was awesome. And I need to ask a question about this, because if I didn't just miss it, then somehow something that I thought was very important got edited out of this book, having to do with the Kinnisons and with the red-haired. So in the book that I read, I remember very distinctly early on when the good super aliens said they were going to, you know, create these bloodlines, the ones that they were going to do on Terran, and remind me to get back to that, the ones they were going to do, they would have a male named Kinnison in every generation, and also a line that would produce females occasionally or whatever, but no Kinnison would ever marry a red-haired female until, you know, they decided that the super being was going to come from them. And I don't remember hearing that in this book, except much later on, maybe 3/4 of the way through, it felt like. It was later, and it was only in passing. It wasn't spelled out clearly like that, like the text version that I read, unless I just missed it.
I mean, it's extremely important in the later books. Those two bloodlines. I don't know if they actually, I don't remember. It's hard for me to like separate what's this book and what's the other books. I don't know if they explicitly spell it out in this book that that's what's going on. I mean, they say that it's a breeding program, kind of like their own little version of eugenics, to create these two bloodlines to create basically the second stage Lensman, later. So, but I don't know if it was specifically spelled out in this book. But it may be on the Wikipedia. You might have been thinking about that.
No. It was specifically spelled out in the text version. I remember it thematically.
It's been a long time since I read the text version.
How about you, X1101? Does any of that ring a bell to you?
It's hard to say. I'm also reading through the rest of the series now, and it's hard to, again, distinguish which was which.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, maybe it was something that was, you know, pasted into the version that I read at some point, or maybe it was edited out of this version. It's something in the revisions. It was there at one point and isn't now. And I thought it was, when I read the book, it felt so critical that when it wasn't in the audio version, it felt like a glaring omission to me. So, I don't know. I wonder if Sam Kinnison is in that bloodline. Uh-oh. Are you guys still there, or did my internet just screw up again?
Nope, I hear you.
I hear you.
Okay, all right. All right. Another question I had for you guys, maybe you guys can help me with this, because you both seem much more well-versed in sci-fi than I am. Why does he call Earth, what is it called, Terran? I forget the exact name of it. What is that reference? Because I've heard it once or twice before, but I think only in literature. And I don't get why that's done, why he doesn't just say Earth.
I wondered the same thing.
Terra is Latin for Earth. So I'm assuming, like, I know in Star Trek they call Earth Terra or Terra a lot of times. I know that in these books, they call it Tellus, which
thank you.
That's interesting. I don't know where that came from, but yeah, they call it. They have this book has interesting names for like things like the calling people Solarians, people from our solar system. which is kind of cool because, I mean, it's multiple people on multiple different planets. So you stop thinking of yourself as being from a planet and you start thinking of yourself from a system, which is kind of interesting.
Solarians was cool. I did like that.
I did
Sol
too.
Sol being the sun. It was better than Earthlings. The word Earthlings, if that was in this book, it would have been just too 1950s sci-fi.
I definitely prefer Terrans to Earthlings.
Well, to Larians, is that what you said? It wasn't Terrans. That was my mistake.
No. But I've seen Terrans instead of Earthlings, and I prefer that. Because you're right. Earthlings just feel 50s bad sci-fi.
I like humans.
No. Humans. You got to get the full Ferengi in there.
Either one's fine.
There has to be some rule of acquisition about bad Ferengi accents.
It doesn't have to be Ferengi. It can be robot. Human.
Sorry, the first thing I went to was Quark.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to say robot either. I meant to say robot.
Robot? What?
iRobot. Tip of the hat to another podcast. But if you guys have ever heard the Onion radio news, anytime that guy says robot, I laugh my ass off. The way he says it is hysterical to me.
I thought they discontinued that because I listened to that years ago, and then it's like the feed stopped.
No, they didn't discontinue making them. They just discontinued making the feed work. If you go check, you can manually download them.
Well, that sucks.
Yes. Yes, it totally defeats the purpose of RSS feeds and podcast. It's they've completely devolved into something that I just can't, find the time to go listen to. Listen to.
And I've got the Onion in my RSS feeds, and every now and then I send something to my wife because it's just too ridiculous not to.
But if you use the RSS feed, they don't get hits on their ads, so they don't make any money.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You're saying this. No, I take that back. The way that their RSS works is you get headlines. You don't get the full article. So I skim the headlines, find what I want, and then hit the link into their site.
Oh, that's enough. The Onion headlines is all I need. I don't need to read their articles.
Can I just rant about how that is the dumbest thing ever? I hate when sites do that. And usually, no matter how much I like the site, if they start doing that with their RSS feed, I boot them straight out of my reader.
Do what? Just give you the headlines?
Yes, I hate that.
That means you don't read ours. It means you don't read ours.
I do not read ours, and that's why.
The thing that I hate is when they span the article across multiple pages and you have to click so that they get another ad click.
Oh yeah. Drives the 5-page articles.
I do like when they tip you off going into it and they say the top 5 things that you can't live without knowing from now on, that you can just skip it. That much I'm glad they warn you ahead of time.
This is going to be a slideshow with 50 ads all around it.
Sounds like somebody needs ad block.
Well, that's the thing. I do have ad block, and it makes it all that much more pointless, less pointful. It's ridiculous.
I'm too lazy to set up ad block. I'd rather just not go.
You're too lazy to install a Firefox plugin that blocks all of the ads?
No, because there are certain places I want to go that I want them to get ad revenue because I like those people. And it's to go in and set up the exceptions for everything. It's just I'll just look at them. It's fine.
You just train your brain to do the ad blocking for you.
I got pretty good at it.
You forget I have Fairpoint. It takes more time to load a web page with ads over Fairpoint.
I wonder if you can get them over to do some port knocking and get that figured out for you.
Oh, man. I'll knock your port, mister. Right back on the topic.
So here's an interesting connection that I saw, and I don't know if... So first of all, have either of you seen new Star Trek?
Yes.
Yes and no.
Red Matter.
And it's just as dumb here as it is in Star Trek.
Did you see it, or am I reaching too far there?
I don't know. Maybe. I could see maybe being... See, but that would require J.J. Abrams to actually have read Lensman, which I'm not sure happened. By the way, total aside, Star Wars trailer. I feel like I'm the only person in the world that's like, meh.
No, you're not.
Good.
I just said meh when I found out there was a Star Wars trailer when you said Star Wars trailer.
Nicely done.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and no matter how terrible it is, it's still going to be shut up and take my money. But that doesn't mean I won't leave the theater very depressed afterwards.
No, see, I'm an Empire Strikes Back fan, but really that's it.
I'm more worried about me going and it actually being good. And that will probably piss me off more than because I can write it off if it sucks. And
you can
and,
just blame Disney.
Well, not even Disney. I can blame J.J. Abrams because he screwed up Star Trek already. Here we go. No.
You blame Abrams. I'm going to blame Disney.
All right. Fair enough. But it's like, and I'm pissed off about them just like jettisoning the EU. But if it's good, then I'm like, damn it. I have to like this now.
I also am very upset about them jettisoning the EU because between me and my sleeping child, there's a bookshelf. And that bookshelf is packed too high and too deep with the EU.
You know, all that time when there was nothing there but the EU and all your real fans, you know, read it and learned it. And then you're just like, yeah, you know, whatever, money. We're just going to throw it out.
Well, and they were such good stories. They could have had to do no work script writing, gone to the shelf of EU books and be like, this one. Made it and been done.
Because every fan of the EU, basically, when they said, hey, let's make episode 7, 8, 9, go, you better do Heir to the Empire. Just do it. Just make those into movies and you're done. It'll make tons of money. It'll be great.
Which Heir to the Empire, that was the crazy clone of a Jedi?
That's the Thrawn trilogy.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, that was amazing.
Right? Imagine that is like an actual trilogy of movies.
But there's not enough Force, and all the movies are about the Jedi and the Force and stuff, and there's not enough of that.
I think people are fed up with the Force at this point. And it was cool, but as soon as they explained it in the midichlorian thing, who even wants to hear it anymore?
And the Star Wars universe has so much more going on for it. It's such a rich, you know, social political universe that they have there's so much more room to play in. But that's just a boring aspect of it.
That's the only really interesting thing that stays continuous throughout the first three movies, actually even all six movies, though I really don't really consider that the other three. But anyway, yeah, that the political thing is the cool part about those stories. So but it's for an American audience, so why would you include that?
And that makes sense why you would like Empire then, because that's the one that's the least space magic and it's all actual, you know, action and politics.
And it's dark.
Well, yeah.
Because, but not dark for dark's sake. It's dark to make it feel more real.
And Lucas actually didn't direct that one. That's why it's good.
Last thing on Star Wars. The only good thing that has come from the new canon is I've been watching that Star Wars.
Jar Jar Binks.
No, go away. The new Star Wars Rebels cartoon. I've been watching that with my kiddo. And I can just tell, like, it was a bunch of dudes that were sitting around going, we need to make a new Star Wars cartoon. We watched a lot of Firefly, and it was really good. So let's just make Firefly and set it in space and make it for kids. Or set it in Star Wars and make it for kids. And it
Firefly was already in space.
I know. But it's interesting. But it's still not worth jettisoning everything else.
I'll have to, when that comes to Netflix, I'll have to watch it, because I've watched a lot of Clone Wars, which has been good.
Anyways, back at the book.
I did have one other Star Wars thing that's on point.
No, and damn it, I said back at the book.
He's going to bring us back.
Yeah, this is book. For some reason, the iron extractors made me think of the Death Star.
Yes, I will second that.
How?
It blows up planets.
That's not what they did at all.
I know. It was a bad segue, but I don't know why. It's in my notes, and I remember having a mental connection there.
A lot of the ships are, like, described as being spherical. So it kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah, that's true. The super ship is spherical. It made me think of Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah, now that you mention that, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah.
I haven't seen that, so I have no idea.
Oh my god, what's wrong with you? It's like the greatest movie.
Oh, see, I would have said it's decent, but for Hollywood, that's an achievement as a decent movie.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's Cowboys and Aliens and nothing more.
Well, truth in advertising works sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's you go into a lot of movies, you know, expecting one thing, and when it's something, you know, with a title like Cowboys and Aliens or, you know, I can't even think of any right
RoboCop.
Now. Sure. Yeah, yeah. You come out of it going, well, no, actually RoboCop was pretty good, but there are some. You come out of it going, I think you tried to do a little too much with that. And Cowboys and Aliens is not that. They did just enough and it worked. It was very well balanced. It was exactly what it was advertised as being. And if you like cowboys and if you like aliens, that's what you got in just the right doses.
I will have to check it out on your recommendation.
It's not, I don't check it out on my first recommendation when I outburst it. It was not the greatest movie ever. It's just cowboys and aliens. That's all.
I'm totally cool with that. I mean, if that's the what's on the tin and that's what I get, I'm good.
Meanwhile, back at the point.
Okay, so I'm going to bring something up from the book. So this is written in 38. I went and just looked. Can we talk about how much, like, how many times, like, city-level destruction happens? And this book is rewritten, like, literally right after the first atomic weapons. And, like, I'm wondering if he looked at that and was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do with this? Or if, like, how did that play into that? Because it's huge. Like, they literally level, like, tons of – I mean, they blow up a city. They blow up two cities.
Philadelphia.
Pittsburgh.
Sorry.
And then they, like, release biological weapons on one and, like, kill an entire population. Like, it's, like, serious. Like, people complain about movies where they, like, blow up cities. Like, these guys were legit. Like, they were like, we're not playing around. We're just going to blow things up, like, by the city.
And then they shake hands and totally chill afterwards.
Like, on this one agent say, well, you know, they get back to Earth and be like, yeah, hey, we signed a treaty.
That's not the most egregious thing. It's like, dude, you put me in a cage. You paraded me around. You poked and prodded me, pretty much torturing me. But you know what? I feel you. I respect you.
Yeah, the whole time he was. What do they call that syndrome where you sympathize with your
Stockholm?
Captors. Thank you. Yeah, it's like he went into it with Stockholm syndrome.
Well, they describe him as being very, you know, analytical and detached in most things. And, you know, while it doesn't excuse the behavior, if you find another not quite as advanced as you civilization that takes some special effort to communicate with, I can understand seeing that as a novelty.
I mean,
we do it to apes and stuff.
But he is real chill with, like, he's like, yeah, I'm cool with you, but, like, literally a couple hours or a couple days before, I think, actually, a couple days before, I just, like, threw, like, toxic chemicals into your cities and killed probably millions of your people. But, you know, we're still cool.
Yeah, but when it comes to the dames, he's a cross between a 20s gangster and a greaser from the Jets and the Sharks. And it's that was weird how he kind of transformed when he was with Cleo.
But him killing all those fishes was completely impersonal. He was simply trying to get away. It wasn't like he hated them, was out to get them, wanted to kill them. It was simply his only way to get away.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking about me. Like, I'd be pissed. there would be some malice in it for me. So I think it would be hard to separate that. But he's professional, so maybe he's good at it. The other thing that, like, it drove me crazy when I read the book the first time was Cleo. Like, how, like, 1940s woman she is, and how, like, oh, I have to be protected and all this stuff. And then at the end of the book, like, the last chapter, she's like, I'll throw bombs, I'll shoot things. What do you want? I got you. like, I got you back. Let's do this. I thought it was interesting. And it's another thing. I wonder if that changed between the two writings or if that was constantly the thing.
I was okay with that because she was a naive kid. But by the end of it, you know, she had virtually gone through boot camp, and she's just at the exact right age where you could go through boot camp and make that kind of a transformation.
I mean, she's going like full on Sarah Connor at the end of this, which is kind of cool.
Ooh, nice Terminator reference. Haven't had one of those in a while.
Do you mean that, or did you say it just for the reference?
No, I mean it. Like, she's like, when I was reading it, I kind of read it as like, you know, I'm done just waiting around. Like, let's get something done so we can get out of here. Like, she's fully willing to like play whatever role needs to be done to get out. Like, it's not a, to her, like, I think her more is not malice. Her is just like, what has to happen to make this work? And I'm down. So I would understand her being more cold and calculated about it than I would Costigan.
Okay, I have one more Star Trek reference to slip in here. And that's, did either of you see Star Trek Voyager?
Yeah, I actually liked Voyager. I know a lot of people didn't like that one, but I enjoyed Voyager a lot.
Yes.
I have a lot of nostalgia because it premiered when I was a kid in elementary school, when I watched it all the way through till it. I watched it real time as it aired. And so for me, that's the most nostalgic Star Trek for me. Anyway, this reminds me very much of the whole Captain Proton holodrama that Tom Paris always has going
on. Yes. I agree. And that also proves that you were very young.
Or it reminds you of this.
Yes, that's more accurate. But seeing as I saw that one first, this made me think of that, which was probably based on this. And now I can't tell which way my pointer's going because my brain's broken.
I got a real Flash Gordon feel from this whole book. Like, I never could get the Flash Gordon thing out of my head. And I never even seen Flash Gordon. It felt like that the whole time.
One of the things that I have constantly wondered about this, and it's been in the works off and on again for years since I've like found out about this series of books. How has somebody not picked this up as like a huge franchise and started like just pumping out movies? I mean, you'd have to change a lot of it because obviously some of the stuff seems cliched, even though it's kind of like this is where it began. But I mean, there is so much in these books that you could turn into movies that would be awesome. I can't believe it's never gotten off the ground.
Well, you said they made an anime out of it, so maybe someone in that world owns the rights to it.
There are actually, up until a couple of years ago, they were working on a Lensman movie. And actually, it was the guy, like I said at the beginning, JMS, the guy that created Babylon 5, he was the writer for it. And so he was, because he's a huge fan, and so he was writing it, and then it fell through. Like, I don't know, for whatever reason, they decided to not make the movie. But
were they gonna have not Ben Affleck in it?
That would be awesome. But I would love to see, like, this is one of those things that, like, if you could remake a book, these would be cool books to remake. Even if you did do as a movie, just to like rewrite them, the same stories, but just like with modern sensibilities, I think it would be very interesting. I think people would enjoy them a lot, because people enjoy them even with the barrier of it being older and kind of cliche and kind of sticky a little bit in some spots. Just to kind of update it would be cool.
Whoa, a 330 reference.
I made a 330 reference and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah, sticky.
Oh, I didn't realize that was a 330 thing.
That's okay. It's 330, we'll get it. It's an audience of one. It's fine with me.
We'll take it. I mean, let's be honest. We know that our audience is one anyways, so.
Well, you know what? If it's included in the drinking game and he's the only one that takes a drink, I'm still happy with it. So 330, take a drink for the shticky.
I could have formalized the drinking game on the wiki sometime.
Well, you can't just put it on the wiki. There's got to be some kind of program that'll print out your card for you. So you got to randomize the card.
Isn't the HPR Audiobook Club drinking game just basically turn on HPR Audiobook Club? Drink.
I thought it was. I thought it was the audiobook club bingo. It wasn't a drinking game, right? It was bingo.
Either one.
We can have drinking bingo.
Yeah, we could do that. So what did you guys think about now this I'm going to go to the place that I always find interesting is the politics and the morality of this. What did you think about when they were talking about, was Kennison the commissioner? Is that who he was?
Virgil Sams is the guy that you're thinking of.
Yeah. Okay. So there was that one chapter where they're in his office and he gets the call from the guy who's, an agent who's found some group of pirates. And he's like, and I think it was even a Martian that he was talking to on the other line. It wasn't even a human, but he's like, do you think we should let him live and bring him to trial or not? And the guy's just like, not. And he's like, you're right. Just kill them all. And the author, the narrator, so the author did this through the narrator, spelled out in no uncertain terms his admiration for a man who can wield that kind of power and be above the law. And, like, I just found that disgusting. I really did not like that part. I didn't like what it said about the author. I didn't like what it said about that time period in our history, if he was indeed representing the sensibilities of his time. I was really, really uncomfortable with that. Almost as actually even more uncomfortable than I was with the V2 gas and that being used as a common weapon. And that was not the only example of it. It was just the most egregious one.
X1101, how far are you into the next book?
Like chapter 2.
Virgil Sams is extremely important to the Lensman series. So
yeah, I'm getting that. He's almost like straight up J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to spoil things.
Only without a dress.
Well, I guess, as he's portrayed in Triplanetary, he's like straight up J. Edgar Hoover.
Right. You can tell when this is hard to talk around. There are certain criteria that are very important to what the Arisians feel are people who are worthy of helping them. Virgil Sams meets all those criteria. That's what they're looking for. So it's interesting that, yeah, I agree with you. I think that, like, him making that call in that office is terrible and horrendous, but that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, I kind of got that. I mean, I kind of got that they appreciate that quality, that a person can wield that kind of power and yet control it. But the way the writer approached it really seemed more like he was admirable, the man who can wield that kind of power. There didn't seem to be much emphasis on the control it part, which wouldn't have made it much better, but it was, it stood out for its absence. You know, it was like, you know, standing in the corner, Bueller, self-control. He didn't put a fine point on it, stuck out.
I'd be interested to see, like, how popular these books are outside of America, because these books are very American. Like, they are written for American sensibilities. And I mean, it kind of makes sense the time that, like, these were written. It was like, rah, 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 America's invincible. We go over, we do what we got to do, you know. So it was a different time. So I could see where that, like, politically, I think people back then may have appreciated that kind of, just in general, more than we do today.
Yeah, it's that whole attitude of, well, we know what's best because we're who we are.
America.
Fuck yeah.
Thank you for picking that up.
I'm not sure that that's any different, though, than how we as a society act today. There are still groups that at least act like and get away with being completely above and outside the law. They're just a little more subtle about it today.
We call those people assholes.
I ran into that a lot at my previous job. Guys who you just could not explain a situation to. You know, like you just couldn't talk to them about what's going on in the Middle East because, oh, dude, bomb them all. Don't worry about those people. I don't know. It's just not where I come from.
Isn't that how we got all that started in the first place? I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, there's no cure for it except for more of it, I guess.
Well, violence is like XML. If it doesn't solve your problem, you're not using enough of it. Usually, I use that line in reverse because we're talking about XML, but it works just as well that way.
Yeah, it's truth. All right, another parallel I got with much more modern fiction is the breeding program in this and keeping the family line separate until they were ready for the penultimate families to meet was Dune. These guys are trying to breed Muad'Dib.
Yes. That's essentially exactly what they're trying to do.
I totally missed that, and that's funny because usually I think of Dune as the source of being ripped off, not the destination.
Yeah. And totally the movie version of Dune. Screw that book version.
You
heretic.
You will repent for your sins, sir. Actually, I really dig the David Lynch movie. I think it's awesome. It's just not the books. But I will sit and watch the Dune movie anytime it's on TV. It's awesome. It has Sting and Patrick Stewart with hair. I mean, it's awesome.
I have seen it so many times because I cannot turn it off if it's on. And it, like, my brother and I were raised, we raised each other on that movie. And I never read the books as a kid, so I only got the movie. And it's fantastic. And if you ask anyone who ever didn't read the book what they thought of the movie, typically they like the movie if they can get over, like, the gross parts and the weird parts. But
isn't that the whole movie?
Yes!
That's what makes it awesome.
See, I read the books and saw the 2000 movie. I think I saw the 1985 movie once and couldn't stand it.
Wow. I like the miniseries. It's good.
Yeah, but if you read the books first, and especially if you read the books and then saw the miniseries first, you wouldn't like it. However, if they had named it something else, if they had named it Arrakis, or if they changed all the proper nouns to something else, I bet you would have liked it. Except you would have said, hey, this is totally ripping off certain parts of Dune.
Yes. But I say the same thing about a certain set of albums by a certain band. Like, this is a great album. It's just not great as compared to the rest of the things that they've done.
Thinking about it, I think the first Blu-ray I ever bought was the David Lynch Dune movie. Because I thought it would be awesome to see that in high def.
But if it was recorded in low def and then you watch it in high def, what happens there?
I believe it was redone. Like, it looks really good. So there was some kind of jiggery puggery that went on to make it look good.
Well, if it's on film, film is essentially high def anyway. It's only ever the conversion to video or to some digital format that brought it down to, brought the resolution down. If they did it from the source film, if they have it, no, that's going to be high def anyway, isn't it?
Yes. I think actually film goes past high def. I think it actually, you can get a lot higher resolution if you want it.
Speaking of film, did you guys hear that they're filming the next James Bond movie on film again? They're going away from digital?
Yeah, well, that's because Sony taught them that it's much easier to get all your movies stolen if they're on digital.
Man, that's like the third Sony jab this time. This is awesome.
And that means we're showing restraint.
It's also the third really tremendous Sony break-in over just dumb security moves that I can remember in the past 10 years or so.
And okay, I have to rant a moment about Sony. This is something that's really kind of stupid.
Before you do, were you referring to the kinks? Because Beverly. No, not Beverly. Muswell Hillbillies was an awesome album. I have to totally disagree with you if you're talking about the Kinks.
Nope, I was talking about the new stuff from Metallica.
Oh, I hate Metallica. Sorry. Carry on.
Well, I'm sorry for you. Where was I going?
Rant against Sony.
Yes. Mildly technical rant. I'm a PlayStation 3 owner. I use it primarily to watch Netflix, but I do also play some video games on it. The dumbest idea ever is for them to use my sign-in to their network as the keychain for my sign-in to all the other services I sign up for. Because when their network's down, that means I can't sign into anything.
Yeah, that's pretty dumb. I won't forgive them for owning Spider-Man.
It's the worst idea in the history of really bad Sony ideas.
Well, wait, isn't that exactly what Google does?
But Google rarely goes down. Sony, obviously, has issues in that area.
Yeah. Well, sure, but you're complaining about the network model, not the uptime model. I mean, yes, Google has 6 9s, and Sony has 3. So that's the part that sounds like what you're upset about.
But I guess when I go to a site and I sign in with Google, I've made that choice. The only time I made a choice with the PlayStation was owning the PlayStation. I've put in my credentials for other things, for Netflix, for YouTube, for Hulu, for Amazon. But I can't use the accounts I've set up that aren't related to Sony at all.
Oh, right. I see.
Unless I can sign into the PlayStation network. So it's the difference is if I go to a site and I choose to sign up with Google, that is me abdicating that responsibility to Google because I chose to. This is them using sign into their network as the keychain to get to all of my other credentials that I've already put in, but they're locking through my sign on to their network.
Well, okay, that's the AOL model, and that worked pretty good for a while. You might be too young to remember that.
I remember all these funny coasters I got in the mail.
I remember collecting some of the tins that they sent out just because I figured I might have a use for those someday, and people were already well beyond the point of throwing all that shit away, so I thought they might be a little collectible, and I have no idea what happened to them.
Did you make a wood burner out of them or something?
No, they would make a decent alcohol stove, though. Methanol.
All right, my Sony rant's over. That happened to me the other day, and I was really pissed off.
Fair enough. So you probably would have hated AOL too, then.
I didn't have to use it much except for the Messenger, but even that was awful.
Meanwhile, back at the point.
How's about the science in this book? Were you guys able to just look past the huge flaws in basic engineering?
You mean like fissionable iron?
No, I figured that was magic plot bullets. I was okay with that. No, I mean like all of the surrounding system. Like all they had to do was get more power out of the iron and their shields got stronger. I mean, their screens, sorry, not their shields. Their screens got stronger and their rays got stronger. Like, to say nothing about power conductors, fuses, any of that stuff. It just more power. And also, they were just able to generate limitless power as if fusion created electricity, not heat. You know?
Well, I think one of the other things is like how they were like, oh yeah, we just saw this stuff that some aliens, you know, we just saw like 20 minutes ago, but we already got it ready and it's bolted into the ship. We're ready to go. Like, we're not going to test it. Let's just do it. The turnaround on things was real quick.
Yeah, it was. And how the spaceship broke in space and they're like, oh, we'll just build some new generators out here out of nothing. Mind you, they couldn't even land.
They have a 3D printer. They'll be all right.
We have no material, no supplies, no spares, no backups, but we got electricians and engineers, and they're on the job.
See, but I guess that's something that always bothered me, again, into the Star Trek universe, where they had the replicator, but they could never replicate anything useful. If my ship's broken, I can't replicate parts for it, but damn it, I'll replicate me a sandwich.
Sandwiches are important, man. That's he's my favorite Earl.
If I could get my 3D printer to print a sandwich, that would be pretty badass.
I think it'd be the most disgusting sandwich ever. It would be like marzipan and raw dough.
Never mind. I don't want one now.
Yeah, what could you shoot through that thing that would taste like anything? And it would, like, the only flavor that it would have is, you know, maybe there's like a mixing compartment where it would put, you know, like the powdered oodles and noodles packet and just, I'm not looking forward to 3D printed food. I think that's the ultimate sign that the middle class is dead and we're all just bottom dwellers.
I don't know. I can't wait for lab grown meat. I think that'd be awesome.
I'm not with you on this one.
You can always grow the best steak. You don't have to worry about getting it. You just grow it.
Yeah, but veal is the best steak because of the mistreatment. That's what makes it so tasty.
So you mistreat cells instead.
Abuse. No, it's got nothing to do with mistreatment. And you say that lab-grown meat is going to be the best thing ever. You try some first, and then let us know how that goes for you.
Oh, I'm sure it tastes like snot burger right now. But I mean, we'll get there. I mean, if we can make iron fissionable and we can fix our spaceships when they break, we can make lab-grown meat that tastes like meat.
Is allotropic a word? I'm going to look that up.
If not, he sure likes using it. And no, Soylent is not something I'm going to try. Thank you very much.
I figured you could run that through your 3D printer.
Dude, I watched a documentary about that stuff, and I was just like, nope. Oh, thank you. I like eating too much.
Yeah, everything I've read about it is like, wow, I'm too busy to eat. I am never, never too busy to eat.
And everybody who says that is a giant tool.
Also, I like cooking and food and flavor too much to ever be too busy to eat.
My stomach is testament to this.
Allotrope is a word. It's when a chemical element can exist in two or more different forms, such as how carbon can be a diamond or, carbon soot or graphite.
So basically, whenever it's liquid, he's calling it allotropic. Okay.
It's so regular iron is ice 9 and the other iron is like water.
But somehow turning it liquid makes it red too.
Yeah, as if it were molten. That threw me off.
Science.
Man, I can't believe I screwed up an ice 9 reference. That one could have won for the episode. And for all you kids playing at home, if you don't get it and go look it up, and you discover who that's from, don't bother. God, I hate Kurt Vonnegut.
What? How do you hate Kurt Vonnegut?
It's garbage. It's all garbage. The only things that man has ever written that aren't garbage are nonsense.
Man. I thought we had something, Bogey.
Oh, come on. Give me an example.
I'm over here being too young to understand the reference.
First you trash Dune, now you're on my Vonnegut. When's it going to end, man?
Oh, man. Well, it's Star Wars. I don't like Star Wars.
Fair enough. I mean, granted, there hasn't been much to sway you to want to like Star Wars for, like, you know, 20 years or so.
Closer to 30, man.
True. Most of the good things about Star Wars were over before I was born.
Sorry, man.
Well, that's okay. My favorite album was recorded the year I was born. And I saw them live, and they were all, like, old men, and it was weird.
Old men make good music. There's plenty of old men that can make good music. There's Willie Nelson.
Pokey, I think that we're going to have to admit that you and I have a different definition of good music. I am not saying you're wrong. I'm simply saying you and I have very different definitions of good music.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? I have always said, and, you know, so I may be taking a hypocritical point here, but I have always said that, you know, just because I like something doesn't mean it's any good. And just because something's good doesn't mean I have to like it. I've always had odd tastes in music.
Most of my favorite music this week, anyway, involves either synthesizers or at least two bass pedals.
Like I said, you may want to check out Oingo Boingo on the Gong Show.
Are there synthesizers involved?
Not in that particular performance, but as I said before, it's their defining moment for sure. Everything that they did after that point was simply an attempt to synthesize that point. So, yeah, you could dig it.
Anyways, back at the book.
Yeah, I was just trying to remember what else I could talk about. I think I brought up all the things I had meant to bring up.
So, as people who have never read the books, how confusing was some of it? Like, did you feel like there were parts missing that you didn't get?
No. Well, I don't think so.
Like I said, as someone who did read the book, there was that big part missing. But no, I don't think anything... You mean... Well, there was the kind of weird absence of the Martians and the Venusians that they had mentioned, but, you know, only that one guy said one word. And I thought that was, like, he could have gone some neat places with that. Other than that, I don't know what you might be referring to.
I'm just curious, because, I mean, it's like the reason I found this audiobook is I was just like trolling around looking for something. And I was actually in the back of my head. I had a couple of years ago went to one of the used bookstores and I found this really cool, like two book giant, like real hardbound book, really nice books of the entire Lensman series in like hardbound book. And I was like, man, I would really like to read those again, but I don't have time to actually sit down and read them. So I was like, well, these are old enough. They're probably public domain. So I went looking for all of them. The only one I can find is Triplanetary, which is sad. I wish the other ones were audiobooks. But as somebody who has read them and going back, I always wonder, like, am I seeing things or understanding things because I've read the other, or are there things there? Because, I mean, there are obvious things that set up, but I don't think you have to know them. So it's a curiosity thing on my part, because he obviously went back and rewrote it knowing the connections it would have to the later books.
I don't know. All the words that just came from you, the only thing that I can relate to is at the end of the book where Virgil Sams was like, oh, we need a new sign. We need a new symbol, something that can't be duplicated and can only be used by the Triplanetary people. You know, which was obviously alluding to the lenses. And if you didn't know they were future books, you might think that were left unaddressed, and not in a way that seemed like it was setting you up for a sequel. Other than that, no, I'm not real sure if anything was egregiously missing.
Cool. Just like I said, it was just curiosity on my part.
I thought it ended really weird. Like it almost seemed like it ended in the middle of a chapter.
Well, I think that's probably because that was the book. It was serialized. It was like magazine articles, kind of like the old Amazing Stories or what. Actually, that might be where it was published. And like the whole, my understanding is the whole back half of the book with Costigan and them and all that was already written. That's what was actually published. It was the stuff before they got added on later.
It was that one line of hers, like right at the end, where Cleo was just like, well, I don't think I'll ever get used to them, and it just ended there. And I was like, really, you're gonna finish up like an I Love Lucy episode or something, like, you know, a punchline without a joke? I don't know. I didn't quite, it didn't seem to fit. Or I didn't understand it, maybe.
You mean you're going to end the novel on a vaguely bigoted comment? That's cool.
Not the worst ending I've ever seen.
No, not at all.
No,
I'm looking at you, Neal Stephenson. I'm looking at you.
No, on the whole, it was wrapped up nicely. All the bases seemed to have been covered. It just was a strange line to end it on.
He was getting paid by the word, and he figured he had enough to buy what he wanted.
Okay.
I don't know that for a fact. I just said that.
Yes, I know. That's obvious. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird book that I don't think I'll ever get used to.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Yeah, it'd be better if we just ended on that, but we can't. But no, I think you hit it right on the head when you said it was, you know, you were lukewarm on it, and I'm lukewarm on the book. I did like it. It was worth reading. I'm glad I invested the time in it, but more as a study of history than for its sheer entertainment value. Anybody else? Final thoughts?
Oh, I enjoyed it. I'm reading the rest of them. But I enjoy it because it's nice to see where science fiction has come from. So that might not be me disagreeing with you.
Yeah, I think you have to. I think reading it, you have to do some mental hand waving to make it like cognitively jive.
No,
but I mean, like, I really like the books. I think now this one, like I said, Triplanetary, I think is the worst of all of them. I mean, it definitely feels like a kind of a rushed throw together and bolted onto the beginning of the series to make some characters later. I mean, they're really. I don't even think there was a reason besides monetary. I mean, because you could completely not have those characters introduced in this book and they work just as fine in the books afterwards. But if you dig it, go read the rest of them because they get better and then they get worse again, like most series. But, you know, everybody's got a little different taste. Like I said, I'm kind of lukewarm on it myself.
If all right. So that's interesting because X1101 is reading the next book in the series and you've already read the next books. Would you recommend the next books in the series? And if so, which it sounds like you would, but I'll let you answer. But if so, assuming that the rest of the books are the yardstick by which this is measured, how many feet and inches would you rate this book up against the others?
If the others are like a foot, like the best is a foot. This is maybe
a yard. They're a yard. We'll give you more increments than that, but whatever you like, use any scale you like.
Nah, we're going with the foot. Cause I don't want to math. I get paid to math. I don't want to math anymore. If the best book is a foot, this is maybe like 4 inches. Like it's,
oh really?
It's a significant drop in quality.
Oh, okay. See, I was thinking, I thought you might say 7 inches or 8 inches out of a foot.
The other ones are more put together than this. Like, this feels like very kludgy to me, like this story. The other ones have more of a through line. Now, obviously, the other books are written completely out of order. The next book in the series, First Lensman, was written after Triplanetary was, well, basically it was written at the same time he rewrote Triplanetary. So like First Lensman wasn't even one of the original books. The third book was the first book. So I mean, you can kind of tell too, like the quality kind of moves around a little bit. And you can kind of, if you didn't know that they were not written in that order, you would tell something was up. I don't think you could tell that they weren't written in order. But it's interesting. I mean, there's enough in the books to one of them you will probably like.
Huh.
That's a decent enough endorsement, I guess.
Like, I really like First Lensman. I think it's a good book. The next one, a lot of people don't because they're like, oh, it was just bolted on, blah, 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 blah. I think it's a good book, so.
Cool. All right. So, do we have a book picked out for our next audiobook club? If you guys don't have any suggestions, I've got one that I think would be interesting.
I think that's agreeable.
X1101, did you have a suggestion or anything? Because I don't want to step on anybody's toes. I can wait.
Nope. All you.
All right. Here's a book I've been waiting to do. I've wanted to do it since the audiobook club started, but I felt like we needed to mature a little first in our kind of our format, not as people. I think we're mature enough or immature enough to handle just about anything that comes across. But I thought this one was a really good story, but it's a tough listen. I'll tell you, going into it, the audio quality is really poor and you really have to concentrate on it to hear it and understand it. It's a totally foreign setting, but I think that is part of what made the book so interesting and the story so interesting. And it's I'm dipping back in here to podiobooks.com, and this one is called City of Masks, and it says it's by Mike Reeves McMillan, and that's a hyphenated last name. And all I really want to say about it, because I think the conversation about it could be good, but all I want to say about it is that I thought the story was really good and the audio quality was really poor. And so I think it's going to be a challenge to listen to because of the audio quality, but I think that the story's worth it, and I'd love to hear what other people have to say about this one. And I don't think a lot of people would get through it if it weren't a quote-unquote assignment.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Does it? No objections? All right.
I can deal with some bad audio as long as it's a good book.
And you know, that's just my opinion. Like I said about music, just because I like it doesn't mean it's good. I mean, I think it's good, but I'd love to hear what some other people think about this one.
Well, you don't like Kurt Vonnegut, so your judgment is a little suspect.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And I do like Oingo Boingo. But I didn't like the Green Lantern movie.
This is just going to be the episode of arguing about things.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks again to you guys for being here and being part of the audiobook club.
No worries.
Enjoyable as always. Enjoyable as always.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a good night.
Peace.
Port knocking.
And we're out.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.
You're just lucky the server's up. I totally hosed my server like a week and a half ago, and I thought it was catastrophic.
Oh, I feel very fortunate that the server's up. I'm very grateful to you for setting that up every time it's working, regardless of what may or may not have happened in my absence.
That's actually the first thing that went through my head. Like, it's kind of nice to have other people rely on your stuff, because I was like, when I set up my server, I didn't know shit about doing servers. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to try this, and I'm just going to fumble around. And I'm still kind of in that space. You know, every once in a while, I'll just make a stupid mistake. And I made a stupid mistake, and the first thing that went through my head is, I have to have this fixed by the next audiobook club, or we won't have notes.
The first rule of being a server admin, Taj, is before you edit a config file, you back it up.
It wasn't even a config file. So I wanted to try a Jitsi Meet, which is like Hangouts, but, you know, free, yeah, and I own it.
Yeah. I remember the Floss Weekly about Jitsi, and being a phone guy, I was kind of enamored with it.
Yeah, it's like what, but free? I'm sorry, I was shifting my headphones just at the wrong point.
It's basically Google Hangouts, but free. And like, you self-host it. So like, a lot of the stuff you can do with Google Hangouts, like multiple people and record your desktop and share your desktop and all that stuff you can do with it. So I was like, oh, I'm going to set this up on my server. This is badass. And I actually got it to work. But I didn't know what Nginx was. And so when it installed, I was like, okay, that's cool. And installed. Well, it totally wiped out all my Apache. Because I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that it would wipe out Apache. So I had to go back. And it wound up just being fixing config files. I mean, it wasn't that hard. But like for a good day, I was just shitting my pants.
So are you now on Nginx?
No, it's still running Apache because I haven't, to be honest, I haven't figured it out and I haven't had time to figure it out. Once I get sorted out, I want to get it running because it's super freaking cool.
You should be able to set them up to, if you've got one thing that needs Apache and one thing that needs Nginx, you should be able to set them up to listen on different ports.
That's not a bad idea. I need to figure that out. I'm sure it's, well, I know, actually I do know how to do it on Apache because that's what I wound up having to go back and change to make it work. But I originally wanted to get it set up because I was like, this would be something to cool do with the, if we do the RPG, like we could use that to like share maps and look at it and stuff. And so I was like, oh, this would be super cool to put on the server. So, you know, I'll get it one of these days. Right now, grad school takes precedence.
You're still the coolest. That's awesome. Now, why? Okay, isn't half the idea behind Nginx to not have to run Apache so that your CPU is less loaded and your RAM is, you know, got more free RAM? I mean, I know the speed is the main thing, but isn't that a big part of it?
Nginx can also be a forward or reverse proxy. So you could set it in front of Apache for certain things as well. It can do a caching proxy. It can do all kinds of stuff.
Oh yeah, I heard about that at a conference. Heard somebody explaining that where it can pretty much make everything think that it's Apache until it can't be Apache, and then forward it on, and that's and just it lightens the load like system wide, like massive systems. It can just kind of trick into thinking Apache's working here just fine. It's really cool.
See, now my best buddy, his job is to manage Apache servers, and if you know what you're doing, Apache's not terrible. It just, there's a lot to it, and it's a dark art in and of itself.
Oh, I know Apache's not terrible. It's one of the greatest things that's ever happened on the planet. It's just Nginx has some advantages for, you know, a guy who wants to run a lightweight server.
Yeah, there are some things it does faster, definitely.
The most comical part about it was I was trying to explain to my wife what happened. And, you know, I never like said these things out loud. I think I said them in my head and it never made sense. And I was like, oh, well, my Apache got, you know, messed up because I installed Nginx. And she just looks at me and she goes, that's racist.
Nginx will serve your website up by any means necessary. Nothing? That doesn't mean anything to anybody?
I guess crickets from this end.
Crickets. I know as soon as you say it, I'm going to be like, derp.
Oh, it was political. Malcolm X was by any means necessary.
Okay. I wouldn't have put that together.
Whereas Martin Luther King was, you know, all for peace. Malcolm X preached by any means necessary. So, yeah, that was bad.
See, I know this is a little terrible, but every time I think of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, all I see is Magneto and Professor X.
Oh my God, that's so true. I never thought of that. That's brilliant.
Oh, you know what? Somebody points. Okay, here's a superhero related thing. We were talking about the wood gas stove, and I showed that to somebody, and he goes, hey, that's just like Batman, where he makes a motorcycle and a car and takes a piece off of each and gets a helmet out of it.
No joke. I'm going to take that Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X thing. And one of the social studies teachers at our school he's a total dork like me. We hang out all the time. I'm going to tell him that, and I guarantee he shits his pants. He's going to think that's the most awesome thing ever.
I guess I don't know how it was. I've always seen that metaphor there.
I would not be surprised in any way to find out that those were the actual influences for those two characters, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I always assumed it was deliberate.
No, yeah. I mean, it's perfect. I mean, it's like literally exactly the right thing. So, I mean, yeah, it has to be that.
I spent my Thanksgiving setting up mail, but it was doing it for me, so it was more fun. But I hate managing email at work, so what do? I set up my own mail server at home.
See, I've always wanted to do that so I could control my stuff because, you know, Gmail, whatever. But it's just such a pain in the ass. I just don't want to do it.
It actually wasn't that bad. I mean, my buddy's already got a VPS. That's the thing, is you have to have a VPS for that, because it's not something you can self-host at home, because unless you do like a business class line, because to get SMTP working, you have to have reverse DNS working.
Well, not just that, but even once you get it working, a lot of ISPs will just block your traffic because they'll see too much going in and out of port 25 and just think you're a spammer.
Well, yeah, that too. But I was thinking, to get it up legitimately, you would need the DNS records, because most real email providers, you try and send somebody an email and you don't have reverse DNS set up right, they'd be like, no.
I think the next thing that I want to play with, and this is, you know, if I get some free time, but something that's really cool is port knocking. I'd like to try setting up like some port knocking rules on my router.
I have no idea what that is, but it sounds completely dirty.
Oh yeah, baby.
It's totally dirty. It's basically, you tell the router to not allow any incoming traffic, or, you know, on whatever ports, and then you set it up to listen, just like it always does. And you ping certain ports in a certain order, a certain number of times, like dialing a combination. And the router will unlock a certain port for incoming traffic. So it's like having a password over a port.
So you would do that if you were trying to come in from the outside? So it's sort of like a, like you said, like a combination lock?
Yes, exactly.
That's sweet.
Yeah, isn't that really neat? Integral told me about that years ago now, and I always thought it was the coolest thing and just figured it was like over my head. But I've learned enough since then to think that I could probably handle that if, you know, if my router can handle it, which I think it can, because I'm running Tomato, but I think you could probably handle it. And then you just write a script for, you know, that knocks on the right ports, and you only, you know, you give that script to the people who you want to have access to your server, or through your router. It doesn't have to be a server, I guess.
And does it actually have to be ICMP traffic, or is it, can it just literally be an attempted connection to that port? That's the other question.
No, it's literally just a ping. You send a series of pings to different, you know, you just send the command ping one time this address, this port, and then ping this time this address, that port, and you have a combination set up. I don't know how, it probably doesn't have to be very long, but it could be, I would imagine. And you just, you hit them in the right order, and, you know, within a certain time frame, and it opens a port for your connection. But I don't know if it's how that works, if it's timed out, or if it works until the port's broken, or if it's now open to everybody. I don't know.
That's interesting. I guess I didn't know you could ping to a specific port. I think of ping as a protocol.
Maybe I'm wrong. You probably know far more about this than I do, so I will say I could easily be wrong in the way that I misunderstood it. But yeah, I think to ping a port, you just add the colon after the address, right? Taj, any idea?
I have never tried it, so I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe. It seems like something that would maybe work. I do like the combination part of it, though. It just makes me want to just like start slamming on people's routers and just try to force ports to see what I can get it open up. I mean, it's so random, because you'd have to know like what port would open to even go in. I mean, it seems fairly secure, but I guess if you could script it to where it would just randomly try everything very, very fast, it might be not the most secure thing in the world.
Well, it adds a layer of security. I don't think it's a very strong layer of security, because if someone, like a man in the middle, could just see what you're doing and then he's got it. But, you know, other than that, I think it probably is pretty fair, because as I understand it, if I understand it correctly, what it protects you from is the random script kiddie who's just scanning the network.
Right, just the novelty of it. I mean, like, the three of us, you were the only one that had heard of it. So, I mean, I think even if you were watching the traffic, you'd probably be like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why is this guy doing this? I mean, you might eventually figure it out, but
I've heard of it. I've just never set it up.
Now we got to put a damn link in the show notes.
I already put it in the chat.
Yes, I know. That's why I now know it has to go in the show notes.
So I'm assuming this is going to wind up being the end of the show.
Yeah, it's going to have to be now. This is cool stuff.
Especially when I make all those port knocking jokes in the middle of the review.
Oh, man, they'll be retroactive by the time this plays.
I know people will hear it and be like, there it is. I now know what it is.
It's a backronym joke.
It's a reverse backronym joke because this part goes at the end of the show.
It's a recursive joke.
That's what you get from a room full of Gnudists.
Womp, 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 womp.
Really? Was that a bad joke? You didn't like that? I loved Gnudists the first time I heard it.
It's better than some of the other ones I've heard.
Yeah, well, that's what it was. I said Freetard to somebody. He goes, I prefer Gnudist.
Now, see, that would have been funny.
It was, and it was Matt Lee, actually, so it came from the perfect source.
Oh, he's hilarious.
Yeah, he is. I like him.
I have the neckbeard to prove it.
Yes, I know. You could go as Matt Lee to a Halloween party.
And actually, Pokey, since the last time you saw me, I don't think I've had a haircut, and I haven't shaved in over a month. So, I'm looking like a lumberjack here.
You live in the right place for it, and I don't blame you.
I mean, it was the neck beard, though. It, all the way down to the shirt collar gets a little itchy, scratchy.
Yeah, I've never liked having a neck beard. My beard wants to grow that way, and it's a constant battle to stop it. So it's I can't do it with just a razor. I need clippers because the razor can't keep ahead of it.
I'm pretty sure if I started to grow a neck beard, my wife would fix that solution problem in my sleep.
My wife's not fond of the neck part of the neck beard, but the beard part of it, I have actually been forbidden from removing my beard.
Yeah, same here. It's my wife said the same thing. I'm not allowed to shave now.
See, mine was the opposite for a long time. She said I couldn't have one. And then so I had a goatee forever, and I rocked that for all it was worth. And then finally last year I was like, look, it's no shave November. I'm growing a beard. I don't care. It's for a reason. She's like, okay. Then I grew it. She's like, okay, it's kind of nice, but you got to keep it trimmed and clean.
Yeah, see, I did no shave November, but I started kind of in the middle of October, and I haven't stopped yet.
See, I took it a different way. I took it to mean that my wife thinks I'm ugly and I should cover up my face as much as I can.
See, I have pictures of my wife and I actually met in high school, and so we went to prom together, and I have prom pictures of the two of us still in my wallet. And at one point I showed them to some people I worked with, and their first response was, who is that with your wife?
Nice.
Because everybody cares for a picture of another man with their wife.
Yes, exactly.
I've got you beat. I met my wife in middle school, so.
I met my first wife in high school, and, that didn't go so well, long run. All right, you guys want to start the show?
Sure.